the Hobos Collective. I am your host, Logar the Barbarian, joined with my co-host,
the Blue Wizard.
Oh my, how are you today?
I'm feeling saucy.
Saucy.
How about yourself, Logar?
Saucy. Saucy sounds good. I like my food nice and saucy. I like lots of spaghetti sauce on my spaghetti.
It's the best thing, way though. To eat it. Yeah.
There's a thing though. Like Kate's and I have to have this balance somewhere. It's hard to find because she likes her food very dry, and her pizzas has always got too much pizza sauce. I'm like, oh, load it up, put more sauce on this thing. I want it nice and saucy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm more on the line of I don't want it drenched in swimming, so I can't say I'm like on the dry side of food, but I don't want it to be soup. It's a sauce.
I mean, I probably am a soupier sauce feller than I think a lot of people. I'm starting to realize. I feel that that's my preference. I like it very saucy.
You barbarians.
You barbarians is juicy. So, we have an episode of a Hobos Collective, and it's Blue and I, and the first thing I think we should talk about is our sponsor of today's episode, which is Ratty Incantati. Ratty Incantati. Go over to RATTIINCANTATTI.com and check it out. I guess you could call them a zine distro. They do a lot of like games, not all necessarily a role-playing game and other assorted indie type media. I think they're trying to get into a few things that aren't games as well, but there's some things that you will definitely be interested in checking out if you're into games, like role-playing games there. UVG 2nd Edition looks like it has just sold out, but you can pick up your copies of Tangled Blessings, Liminal Horror, Kill the Queen. I really need to check out that Kill the Queen. That sounds interesting to me. Where the Weak Grows Tall. All kinds of great, awesome role-playing games and independent media there that you can check out. And I strongly encourage you to check out RATTIINCANTATTI.com, Ratty Incantati. We will have a link in the show notes and on the blog for you to check out, to go visit them. So I got some new books in the here recently.
That is exciting. What'd you get?
Oh my goodness, I have a huge stack of books and zines besides me. A few Kickstarters fulfilled. There was the Hull Breach. Hull Breach is for Mothership, the Mothership role-playing game. If you're not familiar with Mothership, it's a sort of a sci-fi horror role-playing game. It popped up first as a zine, and then they did a big, really successful Kickstarter for a box set that we're all kind of waiting on. The PDF's dropped, and they're saying we should have it physical in hand sometime after January. Pretty rules light compared to some of the big stuff out there. This Hull Breach book is really nice, and it also gives you a nice little section in there. I know when Steve came to game, he was very interested in it, looking at it, and he said, "Oh, what is it? Can I play the Xenomorphs? I want to play the aliens from Alien, because it's kind of styled after Alien." I said, "Well, actually, yes. Actually, Hull Breach gives you the rules to play the aliens as well. Of course, it has to be, serial numbers filed off, but essentially it gives them to you in there. Real nice hardback book. I'm excited to get into some more Mothership here in the near future.
Oh, man. Just imagine the possibilities, though, with doing some Mothership and using the Alien RPG that Free League put out.
Oh, no.
Imagine, like, combining those... there's all sorts of stuff you could do in your like dark sci-fi horror games that throw the Blade Runner game in there too, and you just maybe you got a stew going.
So the Hull Breach and the Mothership and all that, they have an interesting percentile system that I really like. Really easy to pick up on. You're just rolling percentile under your percentage, right? That's it.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Call of Cthulhu.
Very much like it. Pretty simple. The other thing I got that I really am more enamored with than I realized I would be was that Cities Without Number book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's, if you're not familiar, this Kevin Crawford person has put out quite a few games now. One of the big ones was Worlds Without Number, which is kind of a fantasy role-playing game, similar to Dungeons & Dragons with his own take on those things. And then I actually do not have a physical copy of that, just the PDF, and I'm really bad about reading PDFs. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but I suspect there may be a Kickstarter coming up soon for a new... offset,
a new physical,
a new offset, because you can still buy the physical on Drive-Thru RPG. I'm not thrilled with the hardback binding of what they have on Drive-Thru RPG, and I do have
That's fair.
Yeah, it's not my favorite. I'm not totally against it, but I tend to these days I've started buying soft covers instead of hard covers from Drive-Thru. I find them a little more.
Yeah, I mean they're cheaper and they're likely to keep their covers in place longer. That's just
I look at these hardcovers I've gotten from Drive-Thru RPG. I've got quite a few of them actually. I don't have any of them falling apart yet.
Oh, really? Okay.
None of them have fallen apart yet, but the way it's bound makes, because I'm a big book feller. I got a lot of books. I'm really into books, mm-hmm. binding in the physical print. The way it's bound, I'm not comfortable with it. And that may be my own thing. I may be off. It may hold up better than I think it will by looking at these bindings, but I'm always afraid to use those hardcover bound books. I'm scared I'm going to tear up the binding.
Right.
At least print on demand ones.
You remember back, in like 2014 when Wizards of the Coast released fifth edition and the mm-hmm. new player's handbooks from the biggest role-playing game in the world were sent out, and they were falling. Like, my player's handbook fell apart.
Yeah, that happened with the Starfinder, the first run print of those when I picked it up. That was happening with a lot of those, too.
It's weird. You'd think it wouldn't be such a challenge for companies whose job is to put out books, that, you know, they're reference books.
They're going to be open a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it depends too, don't it? Right. Like if you're doing if you've got some of those books, depending on what you're looking at, like a campaign book, like let's say something like Rapanatuk, that'll be open up a lot because you're going to be going back to it each time you play. It's a massive mega dungeon. I've got a couple copies of Rapanatuk. They're Smith's own, nice bound. You can open up them many times. You can write in them. There's spaces to intentionally write in some of those. But some of the other books, like there's a lot of ones that D&D has put out over the years, random like skills and power type books and things like that. They get open during character creation, and after that, they kind of are probably gonna be set aside unless you're leveling up, right?
Yeah,
they're not gonna be flipped through as much as your monster manual that you have to open up every game.
Like your monster manual and your player's handbook are gonna get a lot of use. And like I don't know. I guess my point being, it's interesting that. And maybe it's just a question of scale, but like smaller publishers, smaller places never seem to run into that issue. And you don't have that issue with like zines.
The zine binding is like completely different though than like a
small. Oh, of course. Yeah.
So like, yeah, we got two totally different things going on. Your zine, we got our two staples in there. We're set.
But maybe, I mean, maybe that makes it the superior format.
Oh, I think so. I think we're onto something. It's definitely not as complex of a binding process as that nice hardcover Smithsonian bound book that I got here with Cities Without Number. Now I've got the Stars Without Number as well. Cities Without Number, I'm going to tell you what it is if you're not aware. So I kind of started down this before. He's got Worlds Without Number, then another one is Stars Without Number, which is the sci-fi. Now these are all kind of based on the basic D&D style of game, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, sort of a stripped-down OSR sort of system. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with playing, like, 5th edition or any of the older editions, you're going to pick up on it really quick, probably. There's not a whole lot of new complexity mm-hmm. and nuance to it that you haven't been, exposed to in the past. I like them. It's really neat so far that now everybody talks about the random charge in it, because most of it is random charge for running your game. And a lot of people are like, most of this stuff is totally system neutral and you can use it in any sci-fi game. Now, Cities Without Number is more cyberpunk, stars with, and it has one class essentially in it. You're essentially an operator, and it gives you the different diverse ways you can make operators. And you got like your cyberware and all that. And then Stars Without Number, of course, is your sci-fi flying through stars and all that. So you can take these theoretically and mix them up. Worlds Without Number, Stars Without Number, any of your old school D&D style of games, right? Like that are out there are going to be easier to use for this. Now I'm looking at like the Starship Warden put out by Troll Lord Games, which is a beautiful, I don't want to say mega dungeon, a mega starship.
Yeah, it's a giant, like, well, it's a generation ship, right? Like, was the theory behind it. It was sent from Earth with all sorts of people on it to find a new home. And
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a specific system. It is kind of made for the Troll Lord games in general, like the Siege Engine games. Troll Lord also has a sci-fi system that isn't really a physical book you can buy for it. I've got an older edition of it, but it's a little bit different. The Star Siege is the game, and I really want a physical Star Siege book game real bad with the Siege Engine, because Troll Lord uses the Siege Engine. The Siege Engine is essentially a variation of 3rd, 5th edition, that modern D&D, right? So it's very compatible with stuff like Cities Without Number and Stars Without Number. If you're looking at stuff like the Starship Warden, we run C&C for our Saturday Night Glaam. So jumping under the Starship Warden, there's no conversions needed. We could just jump on and start playing it with our fantasy Castles and Crusades characters. In fact, there's a whole module telling you how to do that available from Troll.
But I mean, so if you wanted to do something like that, you'd have to get your characters in your fantasy game off of their planet and into some sort of weird ship. Maybe even going through a tear in the dimensions.
We've already done that.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
We have a spell jammer now. We built our world and we left it as it was crumbling behind us.
Yeah, not very heroic.
Fled on a spell jammer. I've been looking at, we're starting to get into some of the planar compass stuff in that campaign. So using that old school essentials material for the Castles and Crusades, pretty flawlessly done. It's pretty easy to do. They're essentially the same game in many ways. The transitions, the conversions that have to be made are simple. They're not things I have to do ahead of time. I can just pull up the book and do it in my head, right?
You know, I saw a post, and I've been inspired recently because of you getting Cities Without Number, and I saw a post on Reddit, and now I really want to do a conversion of the Curse of Strahd that is like cyberpunk, like a Ravenloft Shadowrun sort of thing.
Cyberpunk Curse of Strahd, that could be interesting.
I
will roll up the character. I'm going to strongly suggest we use OSE for it, because I want to roll up some OSE characters.
I could be convinced. Yeah, definitely. So would want to use some sort of like not fancy WotC style system, just something stripped down, because I'm already making so many changes.
So the other thing that I got here recently, more books, zines. I got this huge stack of, I got a new stack of IWW-related wobbly zines and things like that. IWW-related wobbly zines and stuff like that. And now, some of these are interesting. I got some old Sabotage, there's this classic, and actually this one from Elizabeth Gurley Flynn on Sabotage is one that we printed out a lot. We took one of the original ones and tried to match the paper as much as we could, and printed a bunch of those out. Sadly, the file that I originally cleaned up for that, I don't have anymore. It was on a laptop that my daughter used, and when it was given back to daddy, it was no longer a functioning laptop, so those files are gone. Those files are history. I can clean it up again and run it, but it's a good little zine. And a bunch of these now. Some of these, here's one, how to organize for the IWW. This one here, I've actually on Big Bill Haywood that I also got in this stack. I've got a few.
Oh, nice.
I've got a few of these laying around that were water damaged, so I'm glad to be getting some newer, not so water damaged ones. All kinds of stuff on Mother Jones, the most dangerous woman in America, and industrial unionism, the road to freedom. So I got a big old stack of that stuff. And some of these actually, I think, are supposed to be for IWW members only. I think these are coming from somebody's, perhaps a delegate usually gives out a certain zine that when you join that has like the bylaws and the constitution for the IWW and all that on it. Some of those are for that. I think I'm going to try to get that to one of the delegates here in our local area. Oh no, I dropped my zines. Oh no.
Zines down.
And we looked at some comic zines last week, if you all remember here. If you haven't, go back and listen to JA Cartoons, Unnatural Beasts. I found some more comic zines if you're interested. There's somebody out here, the Poop Sheet Foundation.
Oh yeah, you just told me about them. Yeah.
They've got a mini comics history archive at poopsheetfoundation.com online. It's worth checking out. What is this site? A virtual archive of mini comics, fanzines, small press comics, new wave comics, and related items. The physical archive housed at PF headquarters is being built with personal acquisitions as well as generous donations from supporters. The project is most definitely a work in progress. But they have a site up there. You can check out the Mini Comics History Zine Archives. And they also got a fundraiser. Help me build the comic zine database. I think that we're going to post a link to this in the show notes. They're almost at their goal, it looks like, of $600. It's at $462 now. If they don't make it before this drops, because this will drop probably Thursday morning, go over, check out, and see if you can back it. I'm sure more than $600 wouldn't hurt either if they were able to top that, go a little over that.
And you know, this sort of thing is really important because people don't really think about it, but physical backups and like actual existing copies are incredibly important. Digital redundancies are important. You can't, if you want your information to survive, you can't just have one.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have it in both forms, you know, and so what they're doing is incredibly, incredibly important.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of zine archives online if you're not familiar with them. There's a lot of them that I go to quite often for more of the stuff that I've always printed out for, like, so a lot of the stuff I print out is for tabling for events, right?
Oh,
sure.
A
lot of the zines.
For sure.
And usually it'll be like, hey, either we were giving them out for free a lot of times, or there's like a suggested donation type thing. So a lot of these zines that I print out are for, you know, the purpose of getting the information in the zine out there. And there's a ton of cool little archives available online that you can print out. Now, some of these, if you've got a copy of the Gonzo Times zine in the mail from me, you've probably gotten some of the zine archives I got to, because I printed out tons of them and I've been throwing in some extra zines of things that I printed out that I felt were, oh, okay, these are good things to get out in the world. Because you know me, I'm into more of a socio-political and philosophical stuff, and certain things I appreciate in those zines that you know, I wanted those out there. So if you've ordered a Gonzo Times zine from me, you've probably gotten a few of those other ones with it too, right?
Well, zine sharing is zine caring.
Yes. You know? and so, like, zines are different, right? Like
they,
like,
are different, yeah.
Like we've talked about this briefly before, like the evolution of zine culture. Like when I first ran into zines, a lot of the largest place, actually probably not the first time I ran into, but I'm used to them around info shops, right?
Sure.
Like zine racks, lots of stuff, and mostly political stuff, DIY stuff, and comics, things like that.
And you would find them in the cool record stores as well. Like, you know, if it's either info shops or record stores is where you would find zines typically.
Yeah. Yeah. And the record store ones tend to be more along the lines of things like the comic, counterculture type stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Whereas I think there's a difference between the comic counterculture and perhaps the politically, like, you get a bunch of books on like feminism, ecology, like you know what I'm saying, like unionism, anarchism, communism, things like that. Is tends to be what pops up in the info shops, because
sure.
You're not. Well, does everybody know what an info shop is? Do our if I take it for granted the lingos that we use in these subcultures, right? So I'm trying to be more intent about being like, okay, stop, hold the brakes. Like talking about Mothership or OSR old school games. If I talk about OSR old school games in front of 90% of the population, they probably have no idea what I'm talking about, right? It's a niche thing. But
we can assume that people listening to this podcast point are at least familiar with what the OSR is. And if not, you know, old school renaissance, old school revival. It's just the movement in gaming to go back to sort of earlier, more stripped down, more, I guess, social sharing of ideas as an element of the game seems to be a pretty big part of it, too. It's a part that I prefer.
Yeah, I like the, what's the word I'm looking for? I like the element of what I've always called open gaming, where the community is contributing and creating. And I think a lot of that exists. Things like basic fantasy RPG, Swords and Wizardry, people putting stuff out there with licenses so that everybody can contribute to it. And it's not coming from one central company, it's coming from the players. The better stuff comes from actual players, I feel.
Yeah, typically speaking, like, I mean, game designers can only make the game that they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And a community full of people, like, it's the wisdom of the masses, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen the, like, there are studies that show if you get a crowd of people and you ask them all to guess how many marbles are in a glass jar, then typically speaking, if you take the average of the answers given by the people polled, it ends up being closer or within like a 2 or 3 step deviation from the actual answer. Because the wisdom of the masses, they're pretty good at finding a solution when you look for, you know, when you poll a large group. That's basics of why we do market surveys and all sorts of other crap. But but anyway, no, I mean, like, you, so yeah, if you have a ton of people sharing ideas, you're gonna get better games.
Yeah,
it's just how it's gonna work.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie, the coolest stuff I'm finding, I think that a lot of folks have at least a few awesome, just innovative, creative things in them that they can get out there. Maybe not everybody has a huge body of work like someone like, I don't know, Isaac Asimov, who had like 5 billion novels in them, but crank those things out left and right. But there's, filling up a 20 to 40 to 60 page zine with the really cool ideas that you got is pretty doable for folks. And also, you don't have to, if you're only doing 20 to 40 to 60 pages of a zine, you don't have to fill out 800 pages and make it all gold. You can put the gold, you know, you don't have to do as much filler. It's not as much fluff.
Yeah. All killer, no filler, baby.
All killer, no filler. Oh, no, we're coming close to the end. I want to talk about something because we're coming close to time, which is I'll talk again about the I want to talk briefly. We're talking about zines and everything about the Gonzo Times zines. Yeah. It is out there and available. If anybody's interested, you got to contact me directly. It's not for public sale yet because there's just not a store carrying it. I'm just selling the zines from me. Right. And what that is largely it was writings that the first issue is largely writings about anti-war stuff, my sentiments against the military when I got out and joined the anti-war movement, when I got out of the Marine Corps, joining the anti-war movement, when I was first getting into things like the IWW and stuff like that. So some of my, ideologies and thoughts have changed since then, but I thought they were important enough to collect into one issue of the Gonzo Times. And it's supposed to be a continued periodical of touching on more, I'm into things like critical theories, things like communism, socialism, mutualism, all these different ideologies that people have out there. So it's going to be a little more on the radical side. Some stuff will be slightly outside of the Overton window in some of these. And I'm hoping to do a lot more art in the second issue than I did in the first issue, because I did some art for the first issue. So that's what you'll see in them. And I'm hoping to have, I've got a couple contributions from some folks for the second issue. So it's not going to be just my writings in there. And I'm hoping that more people will be interested in contributing as we go forward and continue to do future issues of the Gonzo Times. So that's out there and floating about. And just plugging my own little zine there as we're talking about the zines. I'll tell you what, for this episode in the show notes, since I talked about different zine databases and everything else, you go over to the Hobos Collective website, and I promise to get you a whole bunch of links to a lot of places where you can get some great PDFs and stuff like that of zines, different zine libraries and collections. There will be also a link to the fundraiser, help me build the comic zine database, for the Poop Sheet Foundation there, which is currently up on GoFundMe. I've also got a GoFundMe for our print shop. We'll put the link there. We're working on putting together a print shop. The money that was donated to it has not been spent on equipment just yet. We've been working on getting some of the legalities together first and figuring out, as we're printing with what we have, what it is we think the next thing is where our money would be best spent to expand our capabilities in printing.
Yeah, opening a business is complicated, guys. Bear with us.
Especially when you ain't got no capital. You just got a bunch of poor broke workers. We got labor. We can do that.
That's right. Yep. Labor changes the world, baby. We can make it happen.
Solidarity. Well, we're coming about up on it. It's about the time. You tell the folks where they can find you on the internet, Blue?
Yeah, you can check me out on Instagram or Threads at ThatBlueWizard. You could also find me on Magic the Gathering Arena under the same name.
Oh, you're playing? Is that cost to play?
No. Well, it if you want to be good at it. Encourage you. It's a Wizards of the Coast thing. They encourage you to spend your own money, but you don't have to. It is totally free to play and download, and you can get better cards by winning games, just playing gets you like coins and stuff. So it's a free to play model, but it's fun.
I got some Magic cards somewhere in this house. I think my son whisked them away to his bedroom. I have to drag him out. We'll have to do some Magic. I got a bunch of old cards. We'll have to do some kind of Magic draft or something soon.
Oh, yeah.
You can find me at Logar Harold Crom on a lot of different media at this point. I don't know what I'm on anymore. There's so many popping up and going away. There's X Twitter, which I'm still on there watching as the thing falls apart. Everybody know. I know I shouldn't be all mad, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm gonna watch where this goes. Threads, and I'm on Mastodon, but I'm not 100% sure how to get. It's at Logar Hill Crom. I think it's like something like Dice Breaker or something like that. I can't recall. And then of course Facebook and everywhere else. You can find us on the internet, hoboscollective.com. And as always, keep those dice rolling.